Greetings, greetings once again to all my enemies and all my friends. You may have heard the news, but stand by now for the World View. That's right, it's the Weekly World View. I am your host, Doug McBurney, joined in studio today, as always, by my extremely attractive audio engineer. It's the show where we don't take calls, we don't tolerate sponsors, but we do focus on the events of the week through the lens of original thought. And today, as you can well imagine, we will most likely spend the entire show talking about the monumental, cataclysmic election in the United Kingdom, where the Conservatives won a decisive victory. Yes. Now, the good news is the Conservatives won. The bad news is the Conservatives are liberals. And so we won't be spending any more time on that, unfortunately. If you were hoping to get a breakdown of the parliamentary elections there in the United Kingdom, well, you shan't be getting them here. Because we just don't care. Instead, let's see, do I have anything? Oh, I want to thank the fathers at Denver Bible Church for feeding me today. Today was, what did we have? We had a potluck where the husbands were supposed to serve the wives for Mother's Day. Happy Mother's Day, by the way, to all you mothers out there. The husbands were to serve the wives a meal after the service. And when I informed my extremely attractive audio engineer of what I would be able to prepare for her, she opted out. I said, I can do hamburger helper, macaroni and cheese, grilled cheese, do cheese several different ways, hot dogs. And if there's a grill, I could do a burger. And she said, you know, just let's go there, and then if necessary, you can just take me to lunch afterwards. She said she would accept that. But the fathers at Denver Bible Church provided all kinds of great food, although some of it I know was cooked by the women. I just know it. There was some cheating going on there because there's just no way. So anyway, I want to thank the fathers and the mothers at Denver Bible Church for feeding me today. It was a wonderful service. A good time was had by all. And we had a surprisingly good group. Considering the fact that we were buried under 8 inches of ice last night. But so many people weathered the storm and showed up. And a good time was had by all. I wish you all could be there. If you're ever in Denver, look me up. Stop on by. All right. I think, well, so we're not going to do anything on the British election. No, nothing, unfortunately. So let's go to the American election, which is of similar import to the British election, where we'll start with Rick Santorum, who I believe has declared, maybe he hasn't declared yet, just not sure about Rick. Anyway, Rick Santorum is considered the most conservative Republican who could be seeking the nomination, or perhaps he's already announced and I just missed it. Anyway, he's out there, and I don't remember if it was on this show last week or if it was on Bob Enyart's show on KLT here in Denver, where I talked about Rick Santorum basically saying that if Bruce Jenner wants to call himself a woman, he can call himself a woman. Well, now Rick says he was taken out of context and that it was a gotcha question. And so he's clarifying this week on the pages of Breitbart. He gave an interview, and the Breitbart reporter says that the question for Santorum was this. Does he believe Bruce Jenner is a woman? And the author over at Breitbart says, for a conservative, there is no good answer to such a question. Well, I disagree, because you could just say no. And then you would come across as a conservative, and who can criticize you for just observing the biology and saying, well, no, he's not a woman. And then just leave it at that. Rick could have done that. But instead, he said, what did he say? If he wants to call himself a woman, he's a woman. And the folks over at Breitbart are concerned that Well, there's no way to answer that question as a conservative. If you say no, you are a transphobic. And if you say yes, you're a sellout to the right. And then the reporter at Breitbart has the temerity to assert that the bottom line is Bruce Jenner's gender has nothing to do with the presidency. And the author at Breitbart could not be more incorrect. A shallow, stupid reporter. The right answer is no. And you could follow that up with Bruce is obviously mentally ill. I hope he gets the help he needs. He definitely needs some pastoral counsel. And by the way, who cares if the left calls you transphobic? Do you think anyone on the left is going to vote for Rick Santorum anyways? It's just not, yeah, and so you could come off as reasonable to the right, and of course you're always going to be a transphobic, homophobic, you name it, a phobic, to the radical left whack jobs. But, well, the reporter over at Breitbart, trying to defend Rick Santorum, says, well, Santorum answered, let me get back to this. Bruce Jenner's gender has nothing to do with the presidency. You're wrong. It has a lot to do with the presidency. Because when we elect a president, we're electing a personality and a figurehead of sorts. We want to be able to project ourselves onto our candidate. And so the fundamental ideas like male and female and marriage, abortion, all the social issues are extremely important. And so Bruce Jenner's gender and how various presidential candidates feel about it actually does have a lot to do with the presidency. It gets to the moral fiber of the candidate. Well, the reporter at Breitbart wants to defend Santorum. He says, well, Santorum seemed to say yes, that Bruce Jenner, if he wants to call himself, when then Santorum seemed to double down. So anyway, Santorum didn't seem to say yes. He actually said yes. And then he actually doubled down by saying we have to respect Bruce Jenner no matter what. I mean, I read the article. Breitbart notes that conservatives exploded with disgust and the left did its expected victory dance. But now Santorum says that what he was trying to do was deflect a distraction. Yeah, he says, in other words, he said, quote, I am not going to debate with that reporter whether Bruce Jenner is a woman. He can say whatever he wants about himself and then read the rest of my comment. It was an attempt to deflect. And so there you go. Rick Santorum has now disqualified himself as a conservative because he admits that when it came to a simple question of right and wrong, male and female, basic common sense, he chose to deflect. And that's the last thing we need, those of us on the right. Anyway, so people are, it's like, are there any conservatives left? You've got David Cameron over in Britain who's a flaming leftist and he's considered a conservative. And now Rick Santorum, our most conservative candidate, who I've never been a big fan of. I think he's a lawyer and he's a senator. Two strikes. The Bruce Jenner thing is strike three. Anyway. So you heard the story of the slippery slope back 20, 25 years ago when we were being warned by conservatives that all these leftist socialist policies are going to lead us down a slippery slope. And now even the conservatives sound like liberals. You've got to be a liberal to be considered a serious conservative candidate. You have to be a liberal. And so the slippery slope, folks, the thing about a slippery slope is the closer you get to the bottom, the faster you go. And so just keep your eyes open because things are going to be happening at a rapid pace, more and more rapid as we move. But now there still is some hope out there and there still are some conservatives. Case in point, let's go to Austin, Texas, where the Associated Press is reporting that Texas chief law enforcement official has called Snoop Dogg a dope-smoking cop hater. Yeah. Snoop Dogg posted a photo to Instagram of himself, that's Snoop Dogg, the hip-hop artist in quotation marks. Snoop posted an Instagram photo alongside a DPS trooper. Now, for those of you who are civilians out there, the DPS is the Department of Public Safety down there in Texas, and they hire the state troopers. Well, Snoop Dogg posts a photo of himself and a trooper with the comment, "Me and my deputy dog."
deputy dog, says Snoop. The photo was taken during the South by Southwest Music Festival there in the greater Austin area, and the trooper was working off duty as extra security, protecting Snoop Dogg from the people Snoop Dogg has inspired to become thugs and murderers and drug dealers. Well, DPS director Steve McGraw saw the photograph and wrote in an email, here's what the Texas chief law enforcement official, Mr. McGraw, wrote. He said, apparently this trooper must not understand that he was being lampooned by a dope-smoking cop hater, which reflects very poorly on the department, unquote. So in one fell swoop, the DPS director, Steve McCraw, has proven that he is better qualified than Rick Santorum to be president, because at least he's willing to state the obvious, while Rick Santorum chooses to deflect. So there you go. I think that's all the election coverage we have this week. We do have a request in to the Hillary Clinton campaign for an interview, but our calls have not been returned. But we understand neither have anybody else's. So we don't feel too bad about that. But quickly, let's go down to Ferguson, Missouri. That's right. You remember Ferguson? Yes. Ferguson was Baltimore a few months ago. And I'm not sure what's next, but we're due this week for the next one, just in case you were wondering. But let's go back to Ferguson. KMOX in St. Louis is reporting that Dorian Johnson announced last week that he was filing suit against the city of Ferguson. Dorian Johnson is best known as Michael Brown's friend, who was walking with him moments before Brown was shot and killed. He's the one who made up the whole hands up, don't shoot thing. Yes, he's the originator of that fantasy myth. Well, Dorian Johnson's lawsuit last week, he named the city of Ferguson, the former police chief, former officer Darren Wilson, and his lawyer announced that Dorian Johnson is seeking $25,000 in damages. That's right, $25,000. Well, Dorian Johnson was arrested last Wednesday after the big announcement on suspicion of drug possession and resisting arrest. And apparently he got on his knees and he put his hands up and said, don't shoot. And, well, the cops didn't shoot him. They took his dope and they arrested him. We don't know how far the lawsuit will go, but I'm imagining it will continue. And Dorian Johnson probably will shake down Ferguson for some amount, significantly less than $25,000, but enough to restock his dope so that he can go back out and wash, rinse, repeat, like something like that. All right. Now, from Ferguson, we go to another war zone, New York City. Fox in New York is reporting that before a crowd at the National Action Network in Harlem, you know who that is, right? National Action Network, that is the vehicle of the Right Reverend Al Sharpton. That's right. That's the social action group that pays all of Al Sharpton's bills, paid for his gastric bypass, and now is paying to keep him somehow animated as he withers away. Well, a city council member spoke in front of Al Sharpton's shakedown group there in New York, in Harlem. And she said that simple crimes like drinking alcohol in public or urinating in the street should no longer be considered criminal offenses, but should be handled more like parking violations. Yeah, this is a sitting city council member in New York City says we can help solve the crime problem by decriminalizing what she calls low-level crimes. In fact, there are a pair of bills that have been proposed in the city council that would, in fact, decriminalize being drunk in public and urinating in the street. And Reverend Al Sharpton seems to be all for this. He says that over-policing of minor crimes like these often create tension between the community and law enforcement. And Sharpton went on to say, until police understand mutual respect, we will continue having these tensions, said Al Sharpton.
He's okay.
Well, Al Sharpton is probably okay with being drunk in public because I think most of his audiences, everybody's got to be half in the bag to listen to what this guy is saying. But let somebody come up and urinate on Al Sharpton's $2,000 pair of shoes, and let's see how he feels about that.
All right now, let's go.
Doug McBurney. Oh, crank that up. All right, we got to get back to the show. All right, all right. Turn that off. All right, so we've got Al Sharpton and the city council there in New York considering decriminalizing low-level crimes. After all, if you start eliminating crimes from the ledger, then, well, fewer crimes will be committed. Well, they'll still be committed, we just won't call them crimes anymore. That's a novel way to solve the crime problem. But let me tell you what decriminalization actually leads to. Because here in America, we have been decriminalizing all kinds of things. We decriminalized the killing of unborn children back in the 60s. We began decriminalizing homosexuality back in the 90s. Here in Colorado, we've decriminalized possession, smoking, eating of marijuana. We've been decriminalizing stuff for a long time. And here's where it has led us, ladies and gentlemen. It has led us to Lincoln, Nebraska. And if that's not bad enough. No, I love Lincoln, Nebraska. Fabulous town. Right? We got nothing against Lincoln? I don't know. Have you ever been there? Dreadful. Just dreadful. Well, anyway. Actually, I have friends in Lincoln, Nebraska, and I love Lincoln, Nebraska. Let's just leave it at that. But the lawmakers in Nebraska are now considering eliminating the death penalty. Why? Well, if peeing in the street's not such a big deal, eventually you get to the point where killing people's not that big of a deal. So they want to decriminalize the death penalty out of the legislature. This is from an AP story, the Associated Press. If the legislature outlaws capital punishment, Nebraska would become the first conservative state in more than 40 years to abolish the death penalty. And let me just correct the author from the AP, because he obviously went to some prestigious journalism school. But if Nebraska outlaws capital punishment, it is not a conservative state, Mr. AP reporter. Just because they're for low taxes does not mean they're conservatives. If they're going to let murderers get away with murder, then they're no longer conservative. They're just cheap liberals who want to keep more of their money. That's all they are. And besides, Nebraska already has an effective ban on the death penalty. They already have an effective ban on the death penalty. How do I know that? Well, let's just, you know, the last execution in Nebraska occurred in 1997. So it's effectively been banned since then. Well, I mean, except for murder victims. They still have the death penalty applied to them. Murder victims in Nebraska still get the death penalty. It's just that murderers don't. Let me make that clear. AP is reporting that there is now a coalition of Democrats and Republicans, and they have formed behind the death penalty abolition effort. Democrats cite radical disparities of who is sentenced to death and the possibility of executing an innocent person. Republicans point to legal hurdles and the cost. Costs a lot of money, apparently, to put someone to death because of all the lawyers and the appeals and the 20 years on death row and all. So both sides have their issues, and neither are adequate to consider eliminating the death penalty. Republicans, yes, they say that the death penalty wastes tax money. It's a waste of tax money. It takes so long. It's costing us so much money. We could spend that money better elsewhere helping the poor. That's what we could be doing. We could be helping working families. I mean, the ones who aren't killed, anyway. The AP also reminds us that 32 states still have the death penalty, allegedly. Although only two of them actually kill people anymore. The ACLU sponsored a study this year by Seattle University, and the study revealed that capital cases in Washington state cost about $1 million more than cases where prosecutors do not seek the death penalty, thereby making the Republicans' point. So the Republicans are now aligned with the ACLU, and guess what? The conservatives are actually liberals. I mean, if you agree with the ACLU, you might want to reconsider your position, is all I'm saying. A recent Pew Research Center study has found that 55% of Americans favor the death penalty. That's down from 62% in 2011 and down from 100% for all the murder victims who are in heaven right now asking the Lord, how long, Lord, until you take vengeance upon those on the earth who shed our blood? The death penalty polls 100% in heaven. Yes. And, by the way, God votes 100% in favor of the death penalty for convicted capital criminals. So these other polls, well, they really don't matter. But what does matter is that the death penalty is no longer applied to murderers. It's simply redirected and multiplied upon the citizenry. Yeah. Now, speaking of death, let's go to the personhood file. We're going to go to England. The former Great Britain, the Daily Mail, is reporting, sadly, that doctors in England are being told to ask patients over 75 if they will agree to a do not resuscitate order. So can you imagine this? You're a 75-year-old, well, let's say you're an 80-year-old Brit. You beat back the Nazis in World War II. Saved Western civilization from 1,000 years of darkness, and you go in to get a lesion on your head checked out by your dermatologist, and he says, hey, bloke, I'm wondering, would you mind signing this here? It just says that should you lose consciousness, that you don't want to be resuscitated. Well, that's a fine how do you do, right? I've got something on my head here. I was hoping you could check it out. It's been itchy, and you want to talk about a do not resuscitate order. Yeah, that's right, folks. The new National Health Service guidelines in Britain urge general practitioners to draw up end-of-life plans for those over 75, as well as younger patients who are suffering from cancer, dementia, heart disease, or serious lung conditions. They're also being told to ask whether the patient wants doctors to try to resuscitate them if their health suddenly deteriorates. At which point, the patient's looking at the doctor and checking to see if he's got a knife in his hand. why are you asking me that? And what's that syringe for there behind your back? What do you mean if my health suddenly... Do you know something I don't, Doc? Shoot, be straight with me, Doc. I can take it. But no, it's certainly, they say, it's nothing. They don't plan on killing anyone, please. That would be ridiculous. That's never happened before. Where the government has systematically eliminated people. I mean, we're all human beings, are we not? Well, the NHS says that the guidance will improve patients' end-of-life care. But doctors say that it's blatantly wrong, and they say that it will frighten the elderly into thinking they are being written off. Written off, indeed. It might make them think you're trying to kill them. So listen to this. In some surgeries, when you're scheduled for surgery, let's say you're going in, you're going to have a gallbladder surgery. Well, in some surgeries, nurses are cold calling patients over 75 and asking them over the phone if they have thought about resuscitation. You get on the phone, well, you're coming in for surgery. Have you thought about resuscitation? Well, yes, I was actually hoping that would occur after the surgery. Should anything go wrong, I was kind of hoping to wake up. Well, have you ever thought about going the other way with that? Anyway, patients have spoken of the shock of going in for a routine checkup and being asked about resuscitation. Yeah, it's pretty scary. The Liverpool care pathway that we've talked about on this show, supposedly the Liverpool path was scrapped last year after reporters revealed that doctors were placing do not resuscitate notices on patients without their knowledge and depriving them of food and fluids. Depriving them of food and fluid. That's another way of saying killing them. Yeah, when you deprive an incapacitated person of food and fluid, you are killing them. And so while the Liverpool care pathway was ostensibly scrapped in light of the shock and revulsion that it caused among the citizenry there in the formerly Great Britain, it would seem that the National Health Service has just simply found a workaround, and they're still on the path, still on the highway straight to hell, as a matter of fact, and looking to take as many old sick people with them as they can, and that's just disgusting and vile and sad. And that's what socialized medicine gets you. You see, eventually, the people administering socialized medicine, they need more and more and more money to hire more of their relatives, nephews, shiftless nephews, brothers-in-law, mistresses. Eventually, the bureaucracy gets quite large. There's a lot of pensions to be paid. And eventually, you have to just start killing people because the workload is, it just doesn't work. The old people cost too much, and we need that for our retirement. So would you consider just signing this that just says that if you get sick, I could kill you? Because, I mean, I've got tea at 2, and then I've got a dinner date. Anyway, just disgusting. All right. Now, let's go. Let's move into the Yes, There's Hope for Western Civilization file. And for that, we have to go to China for hope for Western civilization, oddly enough. A draft ordinance is to be voted on in Zhejiang province. I hope I'm pronouncing that correctly. If the ordinance is approved, it would give authorities in the province of Zhejiang legal grounds to remove all rooftop crosses. Now, we've been reporting on this since early 2014, according to the AP. Zhejiang officials have toppled crosses for more than 400 churches, sometimes resulting in violent clashes with congregation members. Critics say that the rapid growth of Christian groups have made the ruling Communist Party nervous. We have a quote here from Zheng Legao. He's a pastor from the province. He now lives in the United States, so he can speak freely. He says the authorities have attached great importance to this religious symbol. And if this ordinance passes, this means no more prominent manifestation of Christianity in the public square. A draft of rules on religious structures released by the government this past week says that crosses must be wholly affixed to the building facade and no more than one-tenth of the facade's height. The draft does not provide the rationale for the proposal, well, because they don't have to, because they're communist dictators. And it's pretty obvious what the rationale is. It's to crush rapidly growing Christian population in China. And Pastor good guy, Zheng Legu, the pastor, he says that this demonstrates the Chinese regime's determination to contain the rapid growth of Christianity in China. And so that's why there's hope for Western civilization. Because while the West has, well, they've basically gone gay and stopped getting married to each other in a normal way. They play video games and smoke dope. and rely on social welfare programs or march in the streets or burn down buildings. While all that's going on in the West, the body of Christ is growing in China, so perhaps the hope for the West is going to end up coming from the East.
Don't give up.
I'm Doug McBurney, and this is The Weekly Worldview. So glad to have you back on board, and thanks for that inspirational story from the AP in China, where they're so scared, they're like vampires. They see a cross, and they flip out, because they know that the power of the gospel of Jesus Christ is far superior to the power wielded by the communist dictators by force, who lord it over one another, where Jesus' burden is light. Yes, and they can't compete, and they know it, and so they lash out violently against the only person who can save them from their pathetic lives and deaths. By the way, all right, now let's move into the war file. ISIS is in America now. That's right. They struck in Texas. Well, if you could say that. They struck us on our foot. We struck them on their head in a parking lot in Garland, Texas. The New York Daily News is reporting that ISIS war on Pamela Geller, who's a conservative blogger and a reporter, is on. They have declared a fatwa against Pamela Geller. This past week, an online message was posted claiming that ISIS has fighters across America ready to attack any target we desire. Well, now, they desired to attack Pamela Geller down there in Garland, Texas, but they did not. As a matter of fact, I believe they were shot to death in less than 10 seconds by an off-duty traffic cop, which just proves that if we are ready for these fanatics, that we could wipe them off the face of the earth in the course of a weekend if we decided to do it. But for some reason, we have not decided. I think we've lost, our government has lost the moral authority to make war against anyone. And so Pamela Geller now is on the hit list officially, along with Geert Wilders, who's the Danish anti-Islamicization politician. He's on their hit list. I believe he's been shot at as well. Geller, you'll remember, this past week helped plan a Prophet Muhammad cartoon contest that was attacked by two gunmen in Garland, Texas. Hey, what's the deal with the, do we have to call him the Prophet Muhammad? I mean, I know you people in the media, you're religiously shallow, ignorant, confused. Maybe you're atheist, agnostic, or just plain stupid. But I mean, unless you're a Muslim, I don't think you're obligated to call him the Prophet Muhammad. But apparently there's been a dictate come down, maybe from George Soros' office, or maybe the president, Valerie Jarrett, sent a memo out and said everyone has to call him the Prophet. When he's not a prophet, he's just another false prophet who started a religion for money and women. That's all he is. He doesn't deserve my respect to call him a prophet, starting a pagan religion that's been responsible for the hideous murder of millions of people around the world? Anyway, I've noticed this, though. Everyone calls him the prophet. Sean Hannity calls him the prophet. I'm waiting for Sean Hannity to put the beanie on, throw the prayer rug down on his show. Every time he talks about the prophet, he'll bow to Mecca five times. It's just disturbing to me. Well, I'm not going to call him the prophet because I think he's a false prophet, and I think his religion is a cruel joke that has led to slaughter, and it's pagan and it's satanic. Anyway, let's see. Lawmakers here in America believe that the two men who attempted to attack the Garland, Texas event were influenced by ISIS, but not guided directly by it. And at this point, we could use that Hillary Clinton clip. What difference does it make? But we could use it in the correct context, because whether they were influenced by ISIS or whether they were directly guided, what difference does it make? They loaded their weapons and they went out on the warpath. And fortunately, they ran into a traffic cop in Garland, Texas with a sidearm. Yeah, he cut them down with a pistol. Pretty good shooting. Let's see, what else do the ISIS terrorists have to say? Their latest blog post boasts, "We have 71 trained soldiers in 15 different states ready at our word to attack." Yes, the attack is only the beginning. That's only the beginning, huh? Okay, well, that was pretty weak for an opening act. I mean, those guys were dead in the parking lot before the engine of their car stopped that little tick, tick. You know, you turn your car off and it kind of goes tick, 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 tick as it cools down. They got colder faster. What else do we have here? Our aim is the Kanzir Pamela Geller. We will send her all our lions to achieve her slaughter, they said. Okay, that's it. I'm very scared. I'm sure Pamela is. Well, actually, I'm sure she is actually concerned, because despite the fact that the Islamic State is JV, and Barack Obama was right about that, the A team is dead. All the bravest and smartest among the radical Muslims, they're dead, and now we've got these bozos to deal with, and we should just do that. But I'm sure Pamela is concerned. Because these people have been known to actually kill people that they put on their hit list. Let's see here. Oh, Geert Wilders is going to headline the Palm Beach County Republican Party Lobster Fest in August in Florida. Ha! Well, we'll see about that. I think odds are better than even that the Republicans in Florida turn out to be cowards and they back out. I know, I shouldn't make predictions like that, but I am so pessimistic about the Republican Party that I can't imagine that there's a real man left amongst them. I just don't see it. I'm sorry. You know, any group who expresses a desire to do harm to us and then actually does harm to us, they must be considered an existential threat, and we must make war on them with extreme prejudice. And since Barry won't do it with a gun, as he should, Pamela we'll do it with a pen. It's like the days of Israel when Deborah was the judge. There was simply no man in Israel who was worth his salt, and Deborah had to lead the people, and she did a fine job, by the way. I think I would take Pamela Geller over Barack Obama in a heartbeat. I'd take her over Jeb Bush. I'd take her over Rick Santorum, Mark Rubio, that other lawyer from Texas who I never heard of, the Cuban guy. I'd take her over all those guys. So Pam's going to fight them with a pen, since Barry won't do it with a gun. But I had a report here. Oh, yes, listen to this. Pamela Geller was asked in an interview if the FBI or the Homeland Security Department had reached out to her about security. Since it's well known that when prominent politicians come under threat by Islamic terrorists, that the government has an obligation to protect them. By the way, that's one of our government's primary obligations, is to protect American citizens against criminal acts and murder and terrorism around the country. It's one of the just functions of government. And it's one of the functions that the Barry Ho administration has dropped the ball on. Well, the Weekly Standard reports that now a fatwa, which is a death threat, has now been issued against Pamela Geller. She says neither the FBI nor the Homeland Security Department have contacted her. She says she has a private security team now, and that New York Police Department Counterterrorism Division has been in touch with her. Now, why is it that Barry Ho wouldn't have someone from Homeland Security or the FBI or the Secret Service to protect Pamela Geller from the Islamists? Well, it's obvious, because Barry and the Four Horsewomen of the Apocalypse are on the side that would prefer Pamela Geller dead. Yes, I said it. That he would prefer, and Victoria Nuland, Valerie Jarrett, Hillary Clinton. I can never think of all the Four Horsewomen. I have to review my list. But the girl junta that actually runs the country, they would all prefer that Pamela Geller die. And so does ISIS. So if Barry were to assign security for Pamela, he'd be working at cross purposes against the women who are, in fact, his boss. So he can't do it. Barry. You remember what Barry said. He said in a speech, he said, the future does not belong to those who would slander the Prophet Muhammad. That's what he said. So whose side is Barry on? I think he's on the other side. Yeah, I don't think he's in over his head. I don't think he's naive. I think he's a true believer. And he has taken sides, and he's not on our side, okay? He's more on the side of Elton Simpson, who was one of the Islamist JV attackers down there in Garland, Texas. Elton was from Arizona. He tweeted about martyrdom 20 minutes before the attack, according to the Gateway Pundit, where I pulled this story down. And a well-known terrorist... they don't know if he's in Syria, if he's in Iraq, but Abu Hussein al-Britani, who's a British expat now fighting alongside the Islamists there in the Middle East, Abu Hussein al-Britani apparently had foreknowledge of the attack, and he tweeted this just before the attack. The knives have been sharpened. Soon we will come to your streets with death and slaughter. Little did he know he was talking about the death and slaughter of Elton Simpson. But, the thing about the Islamists is they'll take any death and slaughter they can get, even their own, which is why they need to be dealt with extreme prejudice, instead of basically being coddled by the proctocracy, which Elton was, by the way. Vocative reports that Elton Simpson nearly went to prison in 2011. Yes, he was facing up to 8 years because the FBI said that they charged him with making false statements to the FBI about a trip he was planning to take to Somalia. He said, I'm sure he was going there to find enlightenment and all that, but they know he was going there to become a terrorist, to receive terrorist training. Well, the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, Judge Mary, she found Elton to be a fine young man. Despite audio recordings of Simpson talking about jihad with an FBI informant, the judge said, well, the feds just didn't make their case. And the attorney who defended Elton Simpson, one of the Garland shot, normally I'd say one of the Garland shooters, but this was one of the Garland shot. I just love pointing that out. I called my buddy in Dallas the next morning and I said, I just want to give a tip of my hat to the Garland, Texas Police Department. And he was quite proud to be a Texan. He probably had his Texas belt buckle on that day, and he shined it up extra bright. And every home in Texas had their Texas-shaped clock / ashtray / cutting board. Yeah, you name it. They had that a little. They dusted it all off that morning because they were particularly proud of being Texans. But listen to what the lawyer who defended Elton Simpson, who had conspired on tape about making jihad against American, the attorney who defended him, well, she was shocked to learn that Elton was involved in this. She said some of them, people we suspected of terrorism, they were the worst of the worst. But Elton, he was one of the good ones. He seemed like such a sweet fellow. He just wanted to go to Somalia to help the poor. Didn't you understand that? So she was just devastated that one of the good guys was slaughtered in a parking lot in Garland, Texas. And so I guess I'll just, that's how we'll go to the break. I'll just a hat tip to the police department, especially the traffic division down there in good old Garland, Texas. And I'm Doug McBurney. We're back. And we want to get off of this international stuff, although that was Garland, Texas. Well, I think Texans consider themselves another country. As well, they should. There's probably not another country in America where the terrorists have ever been so rapidly dispatched to Allah. All right, but let's go to reason number 902. To get or keep your children out of the government schools, Texas A&M Galveston professor has failed an entire class of students. He was teaching a management course, and he said this class was so unruly it required security guards for him to feel safe teaching. He said he just reached the breaking point. He just flunked everybody. He calls his class a disgrace, says they couldn't do some of the most simple and basic things. He said it was a semester of backstabbing, lying, cheating, and disrespect. And he just failed everyone and said he's canceling the class. So reason number 902 to get or keep your children out of the government school system, they might drive a professor to the breaking point. And they might fall in with this bunch of slack-jawed losers, tattooed, pierced losers, occupying the college campuses these days. Students, listen to this, students were spreading untrue online rumors about his wife. He says he felt threatened enough to physically teach the course that he required police protection. The school had to put security guards at his class and another class. He says his students expressed a complete lack of maturity, a general incompetence, and were not fit to enter the workforce. All right. One of the students was interviewed and asked about the accusations of the teacher, the professor, and the student said, I never had a problem in the class. I thought I did pretty well, unquote. So there you go. Oh, by the way, the university's vice president said that the failing grades given by the professor will not be upheld. That's reason number 903. Because if your student fails, there'll be some administrator who finds a way to pass them even though they haven't learned what they need to learn. Why? Because, well, funds. Federal and state funds require a certain level of passage and all that. Just get or keep your kids out. Oh, here's reason number 903. I don't know. I've got to change that to 904. Whoever's keeping the spreadsheet out there, I hope you're keeping up with this. There was two reasons in that last story, and now there's this. From Northampton, Massachusetts, the Associated Press reports that Smith College, are you familiar? It's the largest of the all-female Seven Sisters school in the vaunted Ivy League, is changing its policy to accept transgender women. Now, I know it seems like we did this story before, but that was Vanderbilt. This is Smith. Or maybe that was another. Anyway, we did another one where they have. The folks here at Smith College say that they will allow undergraduates who have consistently identified as female since birth. Yeah. The president there says concepts of female identity have, like, evolved. We will not admit students who were born female but identify as male. I hope this is very clear to everyone. We have standards, you know. We are the Ivy League. Anyway, unbelievable. That's the president of Smith College. I believe that's actual audio, as a matter of fact. The advocacy group GLAAD said that it worked with Smith alumni to make the change. GLAAD president and CEO Kate Ellis said that Smith College now joins a growing number of colleges that, like, respect and afford, like, equal opportunity to all women, even those who are mentally ill men. Yes. All right. That's reason number 904 to get or keep your kids out of the government schools. And now, just in case you were, just in case, and I told you earlier in the program that there was help, hope for Western civilization because China's becoming Christianized, but I've gone through a litany of the collapse of Western civilization. And now, just to make you feel worse, let's talk about earthquakes. Scientists now predict that the risk of a mega quake in the next 30 years in California is higher than it was previously thought. The third uniform California earthquake rupture forecast says newly discovered fault zones account for a growing possibility of an earthquake jumping between the fault zones, magnitude 8+. Yes. So just in case you were getting comfortable, there could be the big one. Yeah. The report says the odds of a mega quake in the next 30 years have increased from 4.7 to 7%. That's a lot. The San Andreas Fault has experienced massive earthquakes in the central and northern segments. You remember Tejon in 1857, San Francisco in 1906, but the southern section of the San Andreas Fault has not had a large earthquake for more than 300 years. And why do I bring this up? This is from the Young Earth File. If the Earth was 3.25 billion years old, or 3.5, I think, it wouldn't be this unstable, ladies and gentlemen. Things would have settled down after about the first, 200,000 years. But the Earth is young, and it's unstable, and earthquakes are terrifying. There was just a tremendous earthquake on Mount Everest that was just devastating.
Who said this, though?
What's that? Who says that there could be a big one? Well, this is the third uniform California earthquake rupture forecast. This is an annual, let's see here. Who exactly? Well, there's no person. Oh, Dave Jones. Yeah. Oh, no, that's California's insurance commissioner. Dave Jones says this could be a real problem. He writes the insurance policies. Anyway, this is a number of universities who get together. It's hard to take the big one?
No, because they always say how old.
Oh, I see. Because they don't understand the age of the Earth, it's hard to take these people seriously. Well, what's interesting, though, is even though they have a worldview that's diametrically opposed to the idea of an unstable Earth, they can still read the data and they can see what's going on. And it's obvious to everyone that there is a big one coming, and you got to be ready for it. Well, there's going to be a really big one there. All right, now, reason number 900 and, well, this has got to be changed to 905. Reason number 905 to get or keep your children out of the government schools. We go to Rutgers, which, is that Ivy League, Rutgers? I don't know. I think it is. Anyways, very prestigious university. Hey, Rutgers, the student assembly at Rutgers has voted overwhelmingly to introduce the school's mascot, Scarlet Knight, in various lifestyle choices. Yes, the mascot, they say, will sometimes appear as a homosexual, sometimes as a female, and sometimes as a transgender mascot. This is the mascot. He's wearing a big foam suit. for crying out loud, but they're going to find a way. Yeah, maybe Bruce Jenner will be in there.
No, he'll be the mascot.
Oh, I see. Bruce Jenner could be their mascot. Indeed. Homosexual, female, transgender. Well, Bruce Jenner, the thing about Bruce Jenner is, even though he's transitioning from male to female, he says he's a heterosexual.
So he's confused.
He said he likes women. So he's the actual lesbian trapped in a man's body. That whole joke?
Okay.
Anyway, let's see what I've got a quote from Emmett Brennan. He's the sponsor of the legislation to transgenderify the mascot there at Rutgers. And he says, quote, "This bill is about representing how diverse Rutgers is, that we should take pride in that we're one of the most diverse schools in the nation. It's not really about taking away from the current mascot we have, but it's really about celebrating diversity and involving the student body in our mascot." Unquote. Yeah, he's the head of the college's queer caucus. Seriously, it's called the queer caucus. He says the student government, which that's a mistake, student government. He says the student government will seek input from the queer caucus on how to create non-offensive Scarlet Knights. That's the name of their mascot, Scarlet Knight. They want to create non-offensive Scarlet Knights that appeal to various segments of the student population, except the Christians. They're okay. We can offend them. Because trotting out a transgendered homosexual mascot would be considered offensive, at least in my circle of friends. So they are going to offend us, but apparently that's all right. And they don't care. And I only care in as much as The students at Rutgers are just going to be further confused about sexuality, when the truth is God created us male and female from the beginning of the creation, and that a man should leave his mother and father and be joined to his wife, and the two should become one flesh. But at Rutgers, you're not allowed to say that because you might offend the queer caucus. Oh, listen to this. One freshman told the school newspaper that one day she noticed the blue eyes of the Scarlet Knight at a football game, and she thought, that just does not seem right. Blue eyes? What? She's offended? Blue eyes don't seem right? What's wrong with blue eyes? Oh, it implies that the Scarlet Knight is a white male, the most hated and reviled of all people on college campuses. Anyway, the mascot move follows 2013's alteration of the school's 140-year-old song. You know, they had the school fight song. When 2013, they expunged all non-gender-neutral lyrics from their fight song. It used to go, "My father sent me to old Rutgers and resolved that I should be a man." And they changed it to, "From far and near we come to Rutgers, and we're resolved to learn all that we can." Reason number 905, to get or keep your children out of the government school factories. And here's reason number 906, hot on its heels. The U.S. Department of Education, according to CNS News, CNSNews.com, an outstanding news site. I check it daily. I've made donations. They're fantastic. CNS reports that the U.S. Department of Education is demanding that the Fairfax County Public Schools, that's in Virginia, just outside Washington, D.C., the U.S. Department of Education is demanding that they revise their non-discrimination policies to include gender identity or risk losing their federal funds. That's right. They're being told to bow, to get in line, to take the mark, or they're going to lose their money. Education Secretary Arne Duncan has, quote, advised that the Department of Education considers transgendered students to be protected from sex-based discrimination under Title IX if that identity is sincerely held as a part of the student's core identity. Okay? What is a core identity? You people are mentally ill freaks. I mean, we all have an identity. We don't have a core identity. and then an inner shell, and then an outer skin identity, and then an identity that we relate to with other people, and then another identity that we might relate to it in ourselves in a dark closet while we try on ladies' underwear. It's just not true. But the students at the Fairfax County Public Schools are going to be further confused about sexuality, which is just a straightforward, it's a straightforward thing for crying out loud. You have one identity. You have one gender. Get on with your life. Stop being obsessed with yourself and having sex with everything that moves, kids, okay? Because it's a big mistake. You're going to end up hating yourself. You're going to end up with a chancroid, and you're gonna fester and pus and all that. And you're also going to further separate yourself from the knowledge of the living God, which is the only thing that can save you from your pathetic selves. All right? So, folks, if you're considering having children, if you have children, if you're sending them to the government schools, you are sinning against your child and against God. And he will not hold you blameless. And if at all possible, find a way out. Because the public schools are the fifth column that are working to destroy the nation from within. And with that, we go to Abraham Lincoln. I've had my issues with Mr. Lincoln, but I came across this, and I have to give Mr. Lincoln credit where credit is due. Abraham Lincoln addressed the Young Men's Lyceum of Springfield, Illinois, January 27, 1838. Lincoln was 28 years old when he gave this speech with no formal schooling. Educated himself in a dirt floor cabin and became the most powerful man in the nation. And the quote reads, I'll read a quote from his speech. He says, "Shall we expect some transatlantic military giant to step the ocean and crush us at a blow? Never. All the armies of Europe, Asia, and Africa combined, with all the treasure of the earth, our own excepted, in their military chest, with a Bonaparte for a commander, could not take by force a drink from the Ohio or make a track on the Blue Ridge in a trial of 1,000 years. At what point, then, is the approach of danger to be expected? I answer, if it ever reach us, it must spring up amongst us. It cannot come from abroad. If destruction be our lot, we must ourselves be its author and finisher. As a nation of free men, we must live through all time or die by suicide." Abraham Lincoln, Springfield, Illinois, July 27, 1838. And truer words have rarely been spoken. The fifth column, the insidious treason that threatens America doesn't come from without. Pamela Geller and ISIS accept it. But it comes from within. And Abraham Lincoln gave us fair warning over 150 years ago that this day of reckoning might come. And well, I'm doing what I can to prepare my family and my church and myself for the challenges that face this once great nation. And I hope you will continue to join me in standing up and defending the greatest nation that the living God has ever seen fit to allow on the face of the planet, and that together we might find a way to leave it better for our children. And I shall return next week, should the Lord tarry. And until then, I want to thank my friends at Theology Online, kgov.com. That's kgov.com. American Right to Life, and of course, my other brother, Darryl, who makes it all happen. Here in the Weekly Worldview Studios, as I sit alongside my extremely attractive audio engineer, and I bid you farewell. May the grace of God go with you, and may the peace of Jesus Christ be upon you.